There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Strome holding it along the far wing. Ovechkin's on the ice here, chasing after it. Will he get there for a chance? He might. A backhander. He scores! Alex Ovechkin into the empty net. And that will delight the masses here as the Capitals have a 6-3 lead. And Alex Ovechkin scoring his 50th career goal against the Philadelphia Flyers. And goal 855. Capitals going to take down Philadelphia.
John Walton on the call. Great to hear his voice. He sounds as good as ever. Caps are now 5-1. They lost their opener against the Devils. They've won five straight, including two in a row over the Flyers over the last two nights, and they win 6-3 at home. And there it was, Ovechkin with his second goal on the season, and we start to get closer to Gretzky, who's at 894 all-time with Ovechkin at 855. So what is that? 39 away from tying, 40 away from breaking. Good morning, everybody. It's a Thursday in a week that's rather important leading up to, I think, a pretty significant game. Not a do-or-die game, not a must-win game. Last week was kind of a should-win game. They took care of that. This week would be a nice-to-have game. And we've got, obviously, the issue of Jaden Daniels, who did not practice yesterday. Quinn said we'll get an update from him on Friday. Well, certainly we're going to find out at some point today. If he practiced or not. You know, we will get an injury report at a bare minimum that will indicate either DNP, did not practice, limited, meaning he practiced some, or full, he practiced in full. I think I said this yesterday, Denton. If he practices today, he's going to play on Sunday. If he doesn't practice today, I would guess he is out on Sunday. Of course, there's a possibility that on Friday he could feel a lot better and participate in the walkthrough, and he's going to be participating and is in everything other than the on-the-field so far, as of yesterday, practice work. He is diligent with that virtual reality technology that they use, which has been significant for him, both in college and so far in the NFL. There's always a chance that, you know, Saturday morning is like, it's gone. That little twinge, that little torque, that little rotational pull, you know, that made me wince a little bit, it's gone. I'm ready to roll. But I think if he doesn't practice today, they will err on the side of caution. That is my guess. It is an educated guess, but let's see what happens at practice today. If he doesn't, I bet a lot of money he's out on Sunday, and they'll go with Mariota. If he does, I think that's a clear-cut indication that he is going to play. I got this from, where is it? This from Kevin. Kevin writes, if Marcus Mariota starts and plays well in a win over the Bears, Cliff Kingsbury is going to be at Shelley's looking to smoke a big one. Tom, you better make sure it's on the house. For those of you that don't know the great Shelley's Cigar Bar, 13th and F, Tommy Lavero's place of hangout. This is less about Shelley's, which is a great spot, and more about, can you imagine what people will be saying if Marcus Mariota starts the game Sunday, plays really well, they score 30-plus points, they don't look any different offensively than they looked in the first six games, they win, and this would not lead to, let me be very clear, this isn't going to lead to some sort of quarterback controversy. Of course not. That would be silly. What it will lead to is it will lead to people saying, wow, Jaden's great, but Cliff Kingsbury has a big, big part in what he's done so far as a rookie. That would not be unfair. You know, it'd be really hard to know whether or not Jaden is just a function of the Kingsbury scheme with Marcus Mariota starting one game. All right. And you could say that he kind of started two because he came in after the first series. And I would not feel that way. I still would feel very strongly that this is a 70%-ish, you know, Jaden Daniels in terms of the credit goes to. And, you know, 25 to 30% Cliff so far. Look, he, as in Jaden Daniels, really proved something in that Ravens game that I think goes beyond scheme. Because that game, the team was one-dimensional. They were playing an outstanding opponent who was scoring essentially at will when they had the ball after the early portion of the game. It required him to not only stand in there in the pocket and throw the football over and over again, but throw it into very tight and contested, you know, windows, catch windows. Witness some of the catches that Terry McLaurin made, which were outstanding throws and outstanding catches. That's not scheme. You know, that's not necessarily coaching. That's talent. That is what, you know, only several, not just a few, only several are able to do consistently over and over again. But I do think, Kevin, that if Mariota were to say, you know, throw for 275 and two touchdowns, no picks, rush for another 60 and a touchdown, and they win 34 to 28, that it will be a moment for Cliff Kingsbury, no doubt. And I think he's been outstanding. I think he's done a great job. I also think he's had an incredible pupil, an incredible student to work with. I think both things are true at this point. Let's not forget, as great as Patrick Mahomes is, and he's great, he has played for Andy Reid since he came into the league. Would he be the same had he played for, you know, some run-of-the-mill coach in some other place with a half-assed offensive coordinator? I think that you'd see greatness. We'd consider Mahomes to be where he is, but I don't know if we'd consider him to be exactly where we consider him to be right now. Denton, what will the reaction be? 34-28, Mariota, 275, two touchdowns, no picks, another 50 yards rushing and a touchdown.
It'll be an interesting Monday. I think you'll get a very...
It'll be a glorious Monday.
It'll be a glorious Monday, but you'll get a section of our lovely callers that start to say that Jaden is not that good. It's not true, but they're going to say that.
That would be stupid.
Because though, there are people... You know there are people waiting for it. Because I call in regularly. There are people waiting for it.
One of our, you know, long-time, more than first-time long-time, one of our long-time, many-time callers, Sabah, kind of suggested, I think, a couple of days ago, or maybe it was yesterday, sorry. The days are running together this week, that Kingsbury's been outstanding for Jaden. It's true. I just don't think that you'd get the same consistent results with many others other than Jaden. That's all. But yeah, I don't think people are going to suggest that Jaden isn't good. I think they would suggest he's really benefited from being with Kingsbury, witness Marcus Mariota, and he's not as good as everybody thinks he is. I don't think people would say he's not good. That's taking it to a hyperbolic level that would be silly. Somebody would.
I mean, sports radio is doing a hyperbole? No way. Never heard of that one before.
I know. I'm saying the overwhelming part of our audience. I like to give our audience a little bit more credit than you do sometimes. I'm putting that on Denton. The World Series starts tomorrow night. Are you excited about that or not?
Yes and no. You know, I'm excited to see Juan Soto, but I'm also now coming to the grips, and I read part of Tommy's column about, like, Juan Soto now just had a massive moment that makes him a Yankee. So, like, he's like stepping further and further away from the national Juan Soto and graduating into the Yankee Juan Soto. So I'm happy for him. But, like, the more I see moments of him in Yankees uniforms, it feels like the further away he is from a Nationals uniform. So I'm like, it's a weird place to be in.
I kind of felt that it was over before that. I've talked to Tommy about this. He thinks that this was the nail in the coffin. For those that don't know what we're talking about, Juan Soto hit a three-run shot on what was just an amazing at-bat, one of those dramatic postseason moments in the top of the 10th inning in Cleveland over the weekend. Kept fouling pitch after pitch off, one and two count, and then took Cleveland deep on a three-run shot that put them up three, and they ended up winning the game and closing out the series. And that's one of those, you know, moments that Yankee fans will remember. That's going to go down, not as the most famous Yankee home run of all time, but certainly on the list of most famous and memorable moments. Soto's at bat, the fact that he finished it with a home run. By the way, Stanton's had some of those moments for the Yankees in the postseason already. Judge had that moment, although they lost that game in extra innings. But I kind of felt like he was already going to be a Yankee. I mean, once you get a taste, all due respect to our market when it comes to baseball, once you get a taste of a real baseball market and the intensity and the passion of Yankee fans, you know, Harper's experienced it to a lesser degree than Yankee fans with Philly fans, but Philly being a great sports town, it'd be hard to come back to this. I think one of the real questions is, how did you decide that that was the best thing to do as an organization? He loved it here. He wanted to be here. It was his first experience. He really enjoyed playing for the Nationals and living in Washington. And I understand you were gonna have to pay him a lot of money, but he is one of the three best players in the game, right? Otani, Judge, him. Somebody else can help me out?
I mean, maybe like Francisco Lindor, but he's in the conversation. Okay. He's in the
top five.
Right, definitely.
Maybe Mookie Betts. You know, no matter how old he is, he's still playing at a super high level. But I don't know. Like, how often do you kind of stumble? And I'm not saying stumble as in, you know, they got lucky. But, you know, you did the right work. You got the right guy. And you're just not. I love Mike Rizzo. I think he's the best GM in town. But that's a learner's thing. You know, they're not going to pay him. They're not going to pay Soto what the Yankees are going to pay him or what the Dodgers would have paid him. Or, you know, they got traded to the Padres, obviously. I don't know. At some point, you got to put your big boy pants on and say, do we want to be a real baseball franchise and turn this into a baseball town to a certain degree? You know, you've had two superstar generational players that aren't still with your team. It's not the first franchise to lose those types of players. I understand that. The Dodgers and the Red Sox and the Yankees, I mean, these are different entities altogether. It's almost like they are, you know, in a completely different league. It's just painful to see that, to know that it could have been here because he wasn't one that was just desiring to move on. I think Harper always kind of had a bit of a hankering to move on to where it was more important, you know, to a city that was more of his personality wise. And it's worked out for him, although they have not won a World Series. And the pressure is going to start to build on him, you know, and some of the others there to get through here in the postseason. But that was a moment, no doubt. And this World Series is going to be the most consumed World Series, I think, in a long time. Maybe I'll try to get John Orand on the show tomorrow to talk a little bit about it. But the NFL now so covers up, so, you know, masks everything in its wake, especially when they're playing games. College football does that to a certain extent. And I bet you right now, Denton, right now, who won the World Series last year and what was the matchup?
I only know it because I do this for a living. I think it was Texas.
Texas beat who?
And I think they beat Arizona.
Very good. How many people do you think would have gotten that quickly?
Not very many.
How about with time?
Still, with time or with the benefit of the internet?
No.
No internet? No internet. I don't know that many people would have gotten it.
Well, people are gonna watch this one, I think. It's Dodgers and it's Yankees. It's Ohtani. It's Judge. It's Soto. It's Betts. It's Garrett Cole. It's a matchup we haven't seen since 1981. By the way, in that matchup in 1981, Fernando Valenzuela was a big part of that, and he died over the other day. 63 years old. Really sad. I'm old enough to remember, very much so, Fernando Mania. It was crazy in that, 1980-1981 period. And that was the third year out of four, I think it was, or the third year out of five, where the Yankees and Dodgers played in the World Series. My God, it was big. I mean, October Classic. The NFL was an afterthought when the Yankees and Billy Martin and the Dodgers and Tommy Lasorda were matching up in the World Series in those years. It was huge. I don't know if Billy Martin was definitely the manager. I'd have to look that one up. I'm going to assume that he was the manager for at least one of those. And for all the money in the world, I probably could not name who the manager of the Yankees was if it wasn't Billy Martin. Because there were so many of them that would come in and go. There's a lot of football on this weekend. They're smart not to play any of the games on Sunday. It goes Friday, Saturday in Dodger Stadium. It goes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday back in New York. And then it would go Friday, Saturday next week for games 6 and 7, if necessary, back in L.A. So you're going to go head-to-head with a lot of college football. You're going to go head-to-head with a Monday night game, which, by the way, stinks this week. The first game back in New York Monday night, it's Giants Steelers is the Monday night game. So baseball is going to be in October. The World Series is going to be watched this year. It's not Texas, Arizona.
Isn't it interesting the Yankees are going to end up going against the Giants on a Monday night? New York fans are going to be torn. I mean, not really. They're going to favor the Yankees in that, but I don't know how often we get to see something like that.
1986, Denton, thanks for bringing it up. 1986, Monday Night Football. Washington against the Giants. A massive regular season game. Also, because Game 6 was rained out, Game 7, Mets-Red Sox. An incredible night of sports for New Yorkers. An incredible night. The 86 Giants, of course, are the Super Bowl winning 86 Giants. And that was, I believe, Doug Williams was the starting quarterback. Schrader. Would have been Schrader. Schrader would have been the starter. I want to say 27-20 Giants. I think that was the score. And then they would play later on at RFK in late December for essentially the NFC East crown and the number one seed. And the Giants came into RFK and LT dominated. I mean, Morris, Sims, Bavaro, they dominated Washington. That's one of the games, honestly, that from the glory years, I can remember feeling like, wow, they're just much better than we are. We got a shot at them in the NFC Championship game. A few weeks later in the Meadowlands, got shut out 17-0. Those 86 Giants were so good. You'd have to look up to see what the ratings were. Like, I would bet you that Game 7 of the World Series outdrew Monday Night Football in 1986. I bet that information can be found somewhere. But same night, Game 7, Mets-Red Sox. That's, by the way, the Game 7 following the Bill Buckner game in Game 6. But it was scheduled for Sunday night, and it got rained out. And so they played it Monday night opposite Skins Giants on Monday Night Football.
I don't have the Monday night ratings, but I don't feel like I need the Monday night ratings to tell you Game 7 outdrew it. It looks like they got an estimated 55 to 60 million viewers.
Wow.
So, yeah, that one won.
Yeah. And the Giants, this was the Giant team that they had waited for their entire lives. You know, and they were playing the team that was the behemoth in the division and had become really their chief rival. I just want to pull up to see if I got the score right. I'm an idiot like this. Just seeing if everything's still working memory wise. 27-20. How about that? By the way, that game, Washington went into that game 6-1, and the Giants were 5-2. So Washington was actually in first place when they played. Joe Morris, fourth quarter touchdown, midway through the fourth quarter, broke the 2020 tie, 27-20, Giants. And, of course, the Mets won Game 7 at Shea at the same time. Yeah, of course, we don't even need to see the Monday night numbers. That Giant team, I was having this conversation with a couple of friends playing golf last weekend or two weekends ago, and somebody just said, you know, all right, the best football player ever during your lifetime. And every single person, you know, my age, you know, in their, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, wherever you were in that realm, every single person had the exact same answer: Lawrence Taylor. Now, keep in mind, as Redskin fans, NFC East, we saw him as much as anybody did. You know, I'm not sure every football fan would say the same thing. I think a lot of football fans would say Joe Montana, you know, given all the Super Bowls. But for me, and I've always said this, the best player of my lifetime of watching football is Lawrence Taylor. I don't care what he was on. I didn't know it. I just watched the player and the performance. He was insane. There's never been a defensive player that impactful in football. And I know people will go back and say, yeah, but you didn't see Butkus, and you didn't see, you know, this guy, that guy. You didn't see Jim Brown. You know, people older will always say, well, it's Jim Brown. He's the greatest football player, the greatest athlete in the history of the sport. I didn't see Jim Brown play. I saw Lawrence Taylor play, and Lawrence Taylor was dominant. And in the game that mattered the most, the late season game at RFK for the NFC East division title. All right, Washington was 11-2, Denton. The Giants were, both teams were 11-2. This was for the NFC East crown and essentially the number one seed throughout. Lawrence Taylor in the biggest game of the Giants franchise at that point. 3 sacks. In the game. And I don't know how many tackles he had, because that stat doesn't exist on Pro Football Reference, but he absolutely dominated the game. Joe Jacoby was on the field. Joe Jacoby made the list of the final 31 Hall of Fame for the senior committee. We'll get to some of that. John Keim, though, is going to join us next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sunday, 425, of course, it moved from 1 to 425 because of the expectation that it would be a matchup of the first pick against the second pick, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. Right now, the latter half of that is in jeopardy. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is our good friend John Keim from ESPN, at John_Keim. On X on Twitter. So let's just start with that. What's your lean at this point? Will he play or not play?
I mean, it's impossible to know because there's a lot of information we don't know. Number one, like, what exactly was the rib injury? So I've kind of earlier this week has been a more leaning toward him playing, but it's not a hard lean, right? It's like it's in that 51 to 55% range. I think we need to see, like, does he do anything? Not even does he do anything today. Like, what does he do tomorrow? How does he look when he throws? Is there, what kind of suddenness is there to his game? Does it affect it at all? But I would, at this point, and this is just a guess, not based on reporting, that my lean would be toward him playing. But again, it's not a strong lean because we just don't have enough information.
Why don't we have more information?
Because they're good at concealing it. So that it's, you know, that's why. We know, like, there's some things that you hear, but it's like nothing that I know for sure. And so, you know, it's hard to run with it, but like it's they've been good at not divulging a whole lot, and there aren't a lot of leaks. So, you know, and usually that, but in the past, like, usually they might say, you know, flat out, like, oh, it was just a rib cartilage injury, and this is what you have to do, and blah blah blah. Same with like Brian Robinson's knee or Cleveland Farrell's knee. So, but they've just been pretty quiet on it.
Has anybody asked anybody? And I'm looking right now through the entire Quinn transcript from yesterday because we played some of it, but a lot of it didn't make it to the stream for whatever reason yesterday. But that's neither here nor there. Did anybody ask Quinn specifically what the rib injury is? Is it bruise? Is it cartilage? Is it broken?
Yeah, I think that was asked. I think that was more asked on site. We know it's not broken.
Yeah.
I mean, on Monday. So, you know, I don't remember from yesterday.
Right.
It's.
And
I don't
so
remember.
He just got around it on Monday, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think, but I do think it's like, I do, you know, usually and thing is a short-term thing, et cetera.
I'm sorry, you broke up there for a moment. What did you say?
I said usually, like, a lot of the questions have been more so about, you know, whether it's long term, et cetera. And
yeah.
So, but yeah, no, they've been, and sometimes you're right. Like, sometimes it has to be directly more, what is it that it is dealing with? But they don't, you know, in a lot of cases, they may not say.
What are they required to give you? I'm just curious. Are they required to give you anything other than what they're supposed to do in the injury report?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. They don't have to. I mean, then
right.
A lot of times in the past, like, you know, when I first started, Bubba Tyer was the trainer. We did a lot. Like, he might tell you, it's a sprained meniscus, it's 3 to 4 weeks, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So you had a good idea. And I just think, you know, they're now it's like, what's the minimum they have to give you? And that's what we'll get.
We're talking to John Keim, of course. So, like, I kind of feel like today's the day. I don't know if you feel like that as well. If he practices today, I think he is set to play. If he doesn't, I think they're just, even if he gets better between, you know, after practice today and Sunday, they're going to err on the side of caution. How would you describe your 51 to 55%, you know?
That would probably be about what I would think. The one thing is, what we know about Daniels is that he prepares really well. So from that standpoint, I don't worry about him having to be out there today, right? Like, from a mental standpoint, he's going to be okay. You can go through the walkthroughs. They do a lot of walkthroughs. He's, you know, ultra prepared in that regard. But I think what, you know, the question I would be, like, if you don't practice today, why is that? Is it just because it's still painful? Is it because you can't do things? Or is it because they're being extra cautious? You know, but I think, yeah, if he doesn't do anything today, that would not be a good sign, you know, and if it's just a limited situation on Friday, you know, then it's like, well, what are you able to do in that period? Again, can you throw without pain, and not just without pain, but to, you know, to be effective? And, you know, so I do think, I would say, Kevin, I'm with you. Like, if it's close, based on what Dan Quinn has said, you know, just about taking care of guys, and we've seen him do that in many ways, like whether it's with extra rest, with the kind of practices they run, they're very big on taking care of these guys. So I think if it's close, they wouldn't play him.
Yeah, you know, and I think, too, that there's, like, I was, a friend of mine said to me last night, I you seemed convinced that it wasn't long-term because he said it wasn't long-term. They said that about McCaffrey, you know, early in the season. They've said that about other players. Do you think he's just, you know, painting the best light? And my answer is, no, I actually believe that he was being truthful, that this isn't, you know, more serious than maybe a one-weeker at, you know.
Yeah.
That, do you agree or not? You would know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Because, like, anybody else you talk to said the same thing. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, so, no, yeah, it meshes with everything else you hear. So, you know, I think here's the other thing. The fact that he was on the sidelines in the second half of that game Sunday was a good indicator of the seriousness of it, right? And not that it wasn't hurt or anything like that, but if he was in bad shape where it's going to be multiple weeks, I don't think he's going to be on the sidelines in the second half of that game with, you know, risking a guy, you know, maybe running at them and accidentally hitting him, right? You know, you're not going to take those chances on the sidelines. So, and he was in good spirits. You see him coming off the field. He's waving up his arms to the crowd, you know, little things like that, like, and then what you hear from others around him, it all suggests short term.
So, prefacing this next part of the conversation with the Panthers are really bad on defense, we all understand that. What did you think of Mariota's performance, A, and B, what would your confidence level be in their ability to, you know, be really good offensively Sunday against the Bears if he starts?
Yeah, I think so. One, I think it speaks to, first of all, they didn't have to change the offense. I think this is why they wanted to get a guy like Mariota, because you don't have to change the offense if Jaden Daniels goes out. Now, there are definitely things that Daniels can do better and is more effective and maybe more explosive, but the style of the offense doesn't change at all. And I think that's a good thing. I think Kingsbury calls a really good game and does a lot of things in their run game that puts defenses in, you know, maybe confusion or hesitation or whatever, in conflict. So I don't think that changes either. I think where I would say, like, for Mariota was very prepared. And one thing that Quinn talked about is just how, like, for example, on Friday, how he's out there walking through the 2-minute drill situations just after practices for a little bit more work, and then boom, he's doing it on Sunday. So that's all good. I think there are a couple things, like, I felt like he was more comfortable maybe making plays off rhythm, off schedule, than he was just staying in rhythm on schedule. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think sometimes maybe he made it a little bit harder on himself by doing it that way, but he was successful. So, and I, you know, so, like, that's something to me that bears watching, no pun intended. But I think that, you know, just to see, like, Was that you got to get your feet wet again? And, you know, I know he played against the Browns, but he didn't play a lot this summer. And, you know, but I think that's a strength of his game. So is that, but is, do you know, can he be a little bit better in rhythm if the opportunity to get outside the pocket isn't there? And that's one of the things that I would still want to see. And there were just a few examples of that. And that's, so would that be a big deal? Can he do that? I think the benefit that you see for Mariota is, and Zach Ertz talked about this after the game, is that this is really the first time he's been in this style of an offense since college. Now, Mariota was asked about that on Wednesday, and he kind of like, yeah, but there are all these other good things about all these other offenses, et cetera, et cetera. He's learned a lot more. But maybe this style fits him better, and it gives him the freedom to play more of how and who he is. So I think that's their, but I do, like, the one thing, Kevin, too, that he's not as accurate as Daniels, and will that hurt them against this defense if he has to play?
No doubt. Like, the obvious difference, and there are many differences, but the obvious one is he just doesn't throw the ball as well as Jaden does.
No,
he just doesn't.
He does
and never
not.
Has been able to.
No, he does not. And that's where, that's the one concern, or the one question I would have for sure going into this one. And you know, there are a couple where the other day, and you look at that and say, okay, against a better team, how does this look? And that's where you have to be careful with. I thought he did a nice job, but I don't know yet what it means, what it would mean for him Sunday if he has to play.
Look, as a standalone Sunday against the Panthers, it's about as good as I've ever seen Marcus Mariota look. I mean, John, he was outstanding. You know, even early on in the game, I mean, Lucas kind of whiffed on that sack. Terry didn't get much of a block on that first play on that zone read keeper. He was 13 of 14 in the second half with the one incompletion being a drop by Zaccheaus.
Right. No, and that's why I said, like, he did a really nice job. And then but you try to extrapolate and say, okay, what does this look like against this? Because
no, agreed. Totally agree.
So, but I agree with you. Like, he did a really nice job. He did everything. Like, I don't know that as a backup quarterback, could you come in and do better? I mean, how, you know, like, okay, you complete every pass. And there are a couple throws like, okay, could you have done this here? You know, could you have thrown this ball rather than trying to extend the play because this throw was open for him?
Right.
But he extends a play and he completes a pass. And you're right, like the one that Terry on the block, I almost thought that McLaurin wasn't expecting it to that side for whatever reason.
Yeah,
because like I think it didn't look like he was anticipating that for whatever reason. So, but I think like where you can keep your offense on schedule with Mariota because of the legs, and because they can do things with that, and I think that's a really good thing. But yeah, no, I mean, it was an impressive, because he in training camp, it wasn't like he was, you know, he would miss on a lot of things, and it wasn't always great. But I do think there's merit to he feels comfortable in this offense. But I think the other thing is, and he talked about this too yesterday, about how Kingsbury is really good at not just asking the starting quarterback what plays he likes or doesn't like, but the backups as well. So they go in there knowing, you know, maybe there's a couple plays that Daniels really likes that Mariota doesn't. So you don't call him when he's in there. And I just think I think it's a smart offensive staff. And I think Mariota it's a smart quarterback room. So all of that helps. And you're right. Like he did, I mean, he did a nice job, man. When you see that, okay, we know what the Panthers are dealing with defensively, then can you do this and this against this defense? And that's what we'll find out. And not saying you can't, but that's the thing that, you know, what we know what we saw Sunday, what does it mean for this Sunday?
You know, when you said, and we've heard this from, I think you wrote the story that, you know, described how when he got in there, basically Kingsbury went to Jaden and said, what are you comfortable with? I think that it's interesting. It's not novel. I'm not saying that every team does it, but I know Sean McVay and others have, have gone to their quarterbacks and said, you tell me what works. It's not like he's the first coach to do it. But with that said, it's the perfect segue into Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Denton and I were talking because somebody sent an email in just saying if they have the same level of success offensively and they win on Sunday with Mariota, man, it's going to make Kingsbury look really good. I know the differences between Daniels and Kingsbury and Mariota. There's not going to be a quarterback controversy, certainly.
No.
But people will say, some people will say, man, Kingsbury should get a lot of credit for how both of these quarterbacks, but specifically Jaden, played in the first six games. What would you say?
Oh, for sure. And I think I would always say Kingsbury and his staff, because I think it's a good offensive staff.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anthony Lynn, Brian Johnson.
Wow, Pritchard, and, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all, Bobby Johnson. So I think it's a good offensive staff that all helps. But I think, you know, you can see, like, early on, it seemed like he called the game to get Daniels comfortable, right? And the quick game is really good. Now, you can do the quick game because Daniels is accurate. It's not as simple as, oh, just throw three-yard passes. Like, you've still got to process and make a quick decision and make a good throw, and he does that. But I think that they had a strong idea of who he is as a quarterback and knew how to put him in a position to to do well. But I think to that end, you can do a lot of things because of how Daniels prepares and because of the skill set he has. It's a really good match. But I think regardless of what happens Sunday, I think you can look at that staff and say, you have a really good quarterback in Daniels, and you have a really good play calling Kingsbury. Because there are just things in the run game that they do that it's really fun to watch. And again, they put the defense in conflict. And, you watch, like, the other day, using some unbalanced lines and how they went about doing them and when. It's at times you're playing chess. And so I think, like, that has been really good, and I don't expect that to change at all. I think they deserve a lot of credit.
You know, my favorite formation, and I've talked about this for a few weeks running, because I don't think I've ever seen it until this year, is the offset I formation, where, you know, Eckler and Brian Robinson Jr., or maybe McNichols, whomever it is, they're actually next to the quarterback who's in shotgun, and they're in high formation. I don't think I've ever seen that one before this year.
I'm with you. I haven't, and that's what I'm saying. I'm like, and what I also like, Kevin, is they're using the skills of the guys they have. Like, even on defense, there's a lot of mixing and matching. It's a lot like what Greg Williams used to do when he was here, where it's like, okay, this guy can do this, find a package that fits that skill set. But with the running backs, like Jeremy McNichols went and produced, how many times in the past would you just see it would be Eckler and Brian Robinson, and Jeremy McNichols went and filled in well, but we have these two guys, so we're just going to use them. But they're finding a way to use McNichols as well. I mean, because then you get McNichols and Eckler in the backfield together, it causes a little bit of confusion, and you see that with Eckler too. Like, all right, you run him out in motion. He's running the jet act. He's running the jet sweep. Like, how many running backs run a jet sweep? Not many. Then you bubble him out and you're faking. You draw the defense attention over there, and you run a tunnel slant. You run a tunnel screen to De'Ami Brown because everybody's looking at Eckler.
Loved it.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And so you'll have split backfield sets with Robinson and Eckler or McNichols and Eckler. I mean, it's just. It's a lot of fun. You know, I think people in this area, including myself and probably you kind of forgot how much fun it was to watch an offense that is a little bit different or more creative.
Well, yeah, it's just nice to know that you have more than just competence. I mean, well, you have competence, which they've had incompetence for a long time. But, I mean, we had that stretch with a lot of coaches on one staff that were pretty talented and pretty creative.
Exactly.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
Talking to John Kimes. So, what do you think happens if Mariota plays Sunday?
Oh man, I don't know, because I know the Bears have a really good defense. I also know they haven't played a lot of really good offenses, and so having said that, I still think they're a really good defense. I feel more comfortable with Jane Daniels in there.
Well, me too. Yeah.
So I think it's hard to know with Mariota because the sample size is so small right now for in this offense. And, there is a history there with him where, it hasn't always looked good. But I think he feels really comfortable in this offense. Here's the other thing. Let me say this. I think, regardless of who starts a quarterback, it'll be a competitive game. Because I just think the way this team thinks and operates – is like that, right? Like, I think, I don't think they look at this like, oh, well, Jane's not there, just going to whatever. But that's not their approach. So I think they're a lot more tough-minded and have a stronger belief in what they can do regardless of who's in there. So I like that there's a maturity about this team that is really high. And I think that would bode well regardless of who's at quarterback for Sunday.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, of course, I'd rather have Jaden Daniels in there on Sunday. That would give him a better chance. But I actually, I actually think this will be similar to, you know, Baltimore and Cincinnati once we kind of figured out that they could do things offensively. This is going to be about whether or not the defense can get off the field a few times.
Correct.
You know?
Exactly. It's way more about them. And the other thing is, too, then, it's also limiting turnovers, and which is obviously
Chicago's
not any game.
Thrived on that here. They're plus six in the last three games.
And that will be my one concern. That's why I say throwing in rhythm and trying to make plays off schedule and living off that, it becomes difficult, right?
Right.
So, you know, that's the one thing there that I would want to be more confident in. But yes, I think defensively, and you know, I think defensively, if you can, easier said than done, but you want to be able to contain, obviously keep him, you know, Caleb in the pocket. Can you take away their run game? And it's been kind of inconsistent. I think I could see them doing that. But, you know, I felt like their gap responsibility or their, you know, discipline was a lot better last week. So, you know, but yeah, that would be my concern too.
Yeah. I have 2 minutes here, but I wanted to ask you about sort of beyond Sunday, because you wrote, and I think you share kind of what Ben's view on this has been, but you wrote in the column in the story this morning, NFL trade deadline, salary cap space, draft picks for 32 teams. You wrote the following on behalf of the Washington
section. Yeah, I wrote this like 2 weeks ago, so you got to remind me what
okay.
I wrote. Yeah.
All right, well, you wrote something, and Ben and I have gotten into it a couple of times on this, but I want to see then if you still maintain this position. You wrote, it would be hard to see the Commanders making a move, meaning prior to the trade deadline, unless it's also smart for the long term or for a very low immediate cost. They have multiple seventh round picks.
Yeah.
They're already a threat to win the NFC East. My question to you is, do you think that Adam Peters and company are in a different headspace at 5-2 with respect to perhaps improving their team prior to the trade deadline, if it's available, than they were 7 weeks ago?
Well, I think you always look to improve your team. And I think the question for me is always, it's not about would they look to make the move, because I can see them making a move, but what does that mean? Like, are you getting a depth piece? And I think a depth and rotational piece is really helpful, especially on the defensive line. Like, you need that. And, you know, if you can find another corner, but you're not going to find, I don't think, the corners that you want or that you feel like you need until the off season, you know, because you'd have to give up a lot to get that guy. And that's where so could I see him making a move? Yes. And then it's like, what's the cost? But I do still maintain that it has to, I don't think you're certainly not going to do a Joe Gibbs move and trade a third round pick for a rental. I know that. Like, that would not fit in their MO, right? And, you know, but yes, if you can improve your team and the cost is right, what does that mean though? You know, like, that's the hard part to figure out, but I would have a hard time seeing them making some sort of like really big move
taking the rental part out of it, because I wouldn't want them to do that either, even though in recent years, Von Miller worked out. He was the difference in the Rams winning a Super Bowl, and I'm not comping Washington to that Ram team that was like 6-1 or 7-1
at that point.
And had high expectations. I'm just saying that I would be personally a bit surprised and disappointed if they're not looking to take advantage of a situation that they didn't think they'd be in 7 weeks ago.
Like, and I would agree with that, but like, what does that mean? Because I think
it could mean the trading for a significant piece, as long as that significant piece is going to be around here beyond just this season.
Yeah.
You know, a Denzel Ward is an example, if Cleveland were sellers.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where you'd say, okay, that fits. Because, like, if you get a top guy in there, and then it's like, what's the cost for that? But, yeah, if you can get a guy who's like, listen, this is a guy – If they're sitting there saying, this is a guy we would pursue in the offseason as a free agent.
That's right.
And you can get him now. Like, well, that's different because that fits into what they do. But you're not going to go get a guy and give up. They're not going to make the Chase Young trade that San Francisco did last year.
Well, sure. I mean, Chase Young was a rental. Like, that's a rental,
exactly,
and it's not
right,
even
exactly.
in, you know.
And, And that's what I'm saying. Like, so when we're talking about that, like, if you go out and get a guy like that, and it's like he's a guy that signed for a few more, and I'd have to – when I remember, like, looking at some corners that were free agents after this year to see, and, like, most of them are playing for good teams. So it's kind of hard. But, yeah, if you get a guy that signed for two years beyond this and they're the wrong part of it,
right,
then that can make – that makes sense. And I don't have a problem with that as long – you know, and it's – but I just know, like, knowing how they operate, they will definitely – they're not going to sit there and say, oh, we're not doing anything. We don't want to lose the draft capital. I don't buy that at all. Like, this is an owner who desperately wants information. So if he goes to them and say, listen, what's going on at the trade deadline, they have to have answers about why they might do something or why they won't, who they might pursue and why they might not pursue some others. He wants answers, right? And so – information. And so, like, they will have all that. And so I feel pretty confident that if they make a move, it comes from a great deal of thought and it fits into, you know, the here and now, and then also the future.
All right. I got to run. I'm up against a hard break. Thanks for doing this. Hope you're well. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Kevin. Stay up.
John Keim, everybody. Charch is up next.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.